Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Got an interesting show today, and we are truly going to be following the money, your money, and in this case, it's taxes. And the good news is there's an extension until April 18th for people to file their taxes. The bad news is today is April 6th. And as my guest Bob Lines pointed out, there's 13 days, including today, to go. And that means for some of you, at least one miserable, maybe two miserable weekends between now and then. So we're going to try to ease your pain a little bit. Bob, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Bob, normally, if you listen to our station, Bob has his own show for your benefit on Monday mornings at 10 a.m. And one of his frequent guests is Tammy Flanagan, who's everybody's favorite in our federal community. So glad to have you with us today. And I did a column today. The title is Final Jeopardy. The category is taxes. And we're talking about using data supplied by the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, how tax laws vary from state to state. And we're going to get into that in a minute. But there's 13 days to go here. And if there's not enough time before the deadline, I understand that an extension can be filed. And I always get extensions confused, because when I first heard of them, I very definitely had the wrong impression.
Okay, an extension affords an individual additional time to file the return, but they do have to file the extension, and they should file it by the due date. Now, the due date, as you mentioned, is April 18th, but there are two states that actually go to the 19th, and that's Maine and Massachusetts. So I don't know if a lot of people from Maine and Massachusetts are listening.
Is that New England Day or something?
Something like that. Yep. Patriots Day, I believe.
Yeah, John Alden Day.
All righty. So the filing of a form that's an extension form could not be less complex. There are basically three numbers on the federal form, and it says, how much do you owe? How much have you paid? Pay us the difference now. Herein lies the tough part. What if you don't have the money, but you want to file, but you just can't pay it? Do you put down that you really owe money and you're not paying? I suggest for the ultra cautious folks, they show that. They won't necessarily reject it. My feeling is, how does anybody know until they do the return? Now, somebody may have already done the return. So in that case, if they know that they owe, it's crazy to file an extension. They just file the tax return. And believe it or not, you put a form on the face of your 1040 and say, I don't have the money. But here's what I'll pay you. I'll pay you $200 a month, $500 a month, whatever. And you should look to be able to extinguish the debt in no longer than 5 years.
I see.
Now, if they owe a ton, that isn't quite the story. But let's say somebody owes $5,000. That's a lot of money. And they don't have $5,000. But over a year, they could. So they pay $400 a month. Will they pay a penalty? Very small relative to not paying it.
Yeah.
Will they pay interest? Very small, because interest rates track interest rates in the environment. So back to the comment, can I file an extension to file my return? Yes. Am I filing the return because I don't have it done? By all means, file the extension. Am I filing the extension request because I don't have the money? No. File the return and put this one page on front of it. I think it's a 945 form. And it says, I owe you this money. This is what I intend to do. And it's an automatic installment plan. Don't miss 1 month of the installments, though.
Right.
Because the whole thing could blow up at that point.
And is it true that if you've had an extension, maybe for a year or something like that, or you set up a payment plan or whatever they call it, that you can't do it again the next year?
You can. I don't know that I've ever filed my tax return on time.
Okay.
Personally. I do an extension every year, only because of what I do, I don't have time to do my own.
Yeah.
So I file later on, and that's fine. So you can, extensions are fairly normal for somebody, say, let's say it's a federal worker that has some rental properties, you know, and they just don't have it all together. So they have the time. IRS and Congress doesn't want to penalize you, but they do want to know that you're out there, and they want to know that you're going to file the return. So by filing the extensions, you're telling them two things. I'm still with you, but I need some more time. Do you have to wait until the end of the extension period? No. If you need a week, file the extension. If you need a month, fine. Probably shouldn't go beyond 6 months, because it doesn't go beyond 6 months. And the states parallel the feds as well, both with the simplicity sometimes their penalty and interest is tougher than the Fed's, but nonetheless, they'd rather have your money later than not have it at all.
Yeah. Got a question here. Let me get this out of the way. Very serious question. It says, for married but separated federal employees, what protection can the Fed take to prevent, or what precautions can the Fed take to prevent the spouse from committing tax fraud to hurt their filing?
Well, if they do file married filings separately, that would mean that each files their own return, but based on the individual's income. So if they both are employed, each would report their own salary on their own separately filed. And it says right on the front of it, married filing separately. So right then and there, your liability is not joint with anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So the one files, they pay their taxes, they don't pay their taxes. That's their benefit or their headache. If it was joint and one was really dogging their withholding, then it's a joint tax obligation, both of which, there are exceptions to this, both of which would share in that liability to make it whole. So married filing separately is probably a good idea if one is not
separated.
Separated, not necessarily. They can be, quote, legally separated and still file a joint return. This is very kind of complex. But let's say somebody, the marriage isn't going the way it should, so they separate. Can they file a married filing separate return? Sure, they can do that at any time. Now, if they're legally separated, then that could be another issue.
You know, this is a true story. I knew this couple. This is going back 20 years more. He was a very mysterious. He was a doctor, practiced downtown, K Street, L Street area. Very taciturn guy, and his wife was unhappy, and to make a long story short, she discovered late in their marriage that he was not a doctor. He was a phony, although he had a shingle and everything, and that he had made all kinds of tax problems because when he brought in their tax returns to for her signature, he covered them, and she signed them. I mean, this is kind of a giveaway, right?
Right.
There's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Can you protect yourself from something like that? I mean,
if you can show that the other partner, if you will, in the marriage defrauded you, it's a defense.
Yeah.
But it's an expensive defense to create because it's going to be legal. I would say most people caught in that situation, if they weren't really defrauded, they would say, wow, I didn't know this. Well, you signed the return. But in this case, I didn't know it only because they covered whatever up. That's a hard thing to prove.
Especially
if you're the one with the wherewithal to pay the joint taxes, and the other one is not an honorable person and doesn't have any money to pay the taxes that they did generate.
Okay. I had a friend who some years ago retired from the federal government. He was from Illinois. No ties west of the Mississippi other than that. He moved to Washington State, right across the Columbia River from Portland. And I asked him why, because he was not an outdoors type at all. You know, wasn't physical, didn't kayak, didn't fish, didn't do anything. And he moved to Washington State because it had no state tax. And he was going to therefore live in Washington State and shop in Portland in Oregon, which has no sales tax. And that was the first time I ever actually knew somebody who did something fairly drastic like that, you know, moving 3,000 miles to save on some taxes. And I know you're not a big fan of that.
No, there's a quality of life. Some people would chuckle that know me when I say that, but there's a quality of life issue here. And running around to save taxes, and we see it here, not everybody is local, but in the district, booze was always less expensive than it was. So people would buy it there and then go across the district line, but they were generally major avenues. And who was on the other side? The Maryland tax people.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get back, because your question, your comment is deep, but it even goes deeper. People seek out tax deductions like they are the panacea of all things on the tax return. A tax deduction, first you have to spend the money.
Yeah.
So it makes no sense to spend money to get a tax deduction. But let's say that you do, unadvised or advised, because you did something that provided you a tax deduction. and you spend a dollar, you don't get a dollar back. It's wholly based on your tax bracket. Tax brackets will make people's eyes glaze if I start to talk about it. They're much like walking upstairs in a building. Everybody comes in on the same level. It's very low. It's low relative to the next stair up. Taxes are the same way. But I would imagine most anybody listening to the show has income enough not to be at the ground level.
Yeah.
So they're up a notch or two, and let's say that they're in the 25% federal tax bracket. Immediately people say, they're going to take 25% of my income. No, remember that some of that income was earned and you were taxed at a lower level, but everybody's got a base level of income. So whatever you do once you're at that base is either going to save you or it's going to cost you taxes. So in this example, remembering too, we have state tax brackets in many, but not all states. Let's say it's 5% for the sake of discussion. So the individual's in a combined tax bracket of 30%. And they seek this tax deduction that'll, you know, for $100. They don't save $100. They save $30. In other words, they spent $100. It's out of their pocket. And Uncle gives, and the state gives them back $30. So they spent $70 to save
Warren Larson, our producer, is giving me the hook here. We'll take a short break here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back. Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Bob Lyons for your benefit. And also, Bob, you're the founder of the National Institute of Transition Planning.
Well, I started it along with two others many years ago.
Okay.
They have since gone.
You're the last man standing.
I'm the last man standing, but the company would be nothing without the presenters.
Yeah.
And I may have been there on the first day, and maybe I talk about income taxes and finances to a degree, but we just have a group of true professionals, nice. They speak English in front of a group. In other words, they don't talk in their professional ease. They're flexible. They answer questions after class. They don't charge people just for a quick question. So it's that, and we work with really great contract officers. I mean, it truly is, in my life, it's like
everybody's beautiful and these are pre-retirement seminars.
Pre-retirement, mid-career, beginning career,
whatever they want.
Yeah, whatever they want.
Here's a question, and then you can talk about English translations. What is the real tax savings for a tax deductible dollar? And then how about children? I don't understand this.
Okay. So before the break, we talked about walking into a building and we were at a low level and we walked up the stairs. So that's akin to tax brackets. You start with your tax return, and the first group of dollars are taxed very low, second group less low, third group less low, and then it starts to get high. But once you get to that level, everybody's got a base level of income that's going to take them right through the lowest brackets. So the next dollar that they earn is hit at a higher rate, or the next dollar that they save or claim as a tax deduction is hit at their highest tax rate. And we talked earlier about, let's say that their tax rate, because of the size of their income, is 25%. That's what bracket they're in. That's not 25% of all their income, just on this money that got up in that level. So, and you couple the state tax bracket with that, that's 30% of every dollar that you bring in over a certain amount or that you find as a tax deduction. So I use the example, we donated $100 to a charity. Yeah, we like the charity and we like the idea that we'd save a lot in taxes. Well, it's not a lot, it's 30%, which is a high percent, but you still spend $100.
Yeah.
So after the tax kind of rebate, you still spend $70. Now, this is where, you know, charities, there's nothing wrong with a charity, but sometimes people get confused with tax deductions and economics, and there'll generally be no economics to say, I went out and I bought a computer and I can claim it as a tax deduction. Not so sure they can. And I spent $1,000.
Yeah.
I saved $300. Well, no, you didn't. You wasted $700.
Yeah.
Unless you needed that to become more proficient or track your investments or something. Or back in the days when people would want to buy a bigger house to get a bigger mortgage and to help satisfy the mental angst of writing that mortgage check every month, it was tax deductible interest and real estate taxes. Yeah, but you have a mortgage for 15, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, well, I hear a lot about people who have the money and their house is paid off, but they're going to move and then get another house, maybe less, maybe they're downsizing, but they want a mortgage for that deduction. Is that wise?
In today's world, maybe, because interest rates are so low. Mm-hmm. It depends on when we're talking. If we were having the same discussion 10 years ago, we'd have to scratch our head because a mortgage might cost 6, 7, 8%. Now, if they're not making 6, 7, or 8% on their money, plus the estate, there's an issue here. They get a tax deduction, but they had to spend the money. Now, here's a good example for that question. People are going into retirement, and I get this question an awful lot at the seminars. I don't want a mortgage in retirement. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take $50,000, $20,000 out of my TSP, and I'm going to put it down on the house. And they go, well, if you take 20 or 50 out, you're not putting 20 or 50 down because taxes. You have to pay tax.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's go back to our 30% tax rate, and they take $50,000 out of their thrift. They have to pay $15,000 in tax. So they didn't have the 50 to put in after paying the tax. You follow me? They have 35 left. And it doesn't make any sense. And somebody would say, yeah, well, why don't they borrow the money from the thrift? Because you can do that for a house. Alrighty, so let's say we borrow the money from the thrift. And then somebody says, yeah, but we have to pay interest on the loan. Well, they're not paying 6 or 7 because when they borrow the money, it's a G fund rate at the day they borrow the money.
Mm-hmm.
So electronically, the mortgage comes into their personal account. Electronically, the monthly payment goes into the checking account. Nobody's got to write a check. And I think it's an economic good move in that case, as long as interest rates stay low with reference to mortgages.
You know, I would think...
Did I make any sense with that?
Well, I think people like me, I would need a lot of help with that. And finally, show me the options. And then finally, somebody I trust say, push button B.
Yeah. Here. This was only because they... had to do this. They just wanted to do this. They didn't want as large a mortgage. I understand that one, but pulling it out all at once, I don't understand.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, back on the tax thing now, and I will expose my ignorance, but say you're making, I'll make it high enough that the different brackets come in. Say you're making $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody says that puts you in the, what bracket would that
be? Most likely they're going to be looking at a federal bracket of 28%.
Okay.
And the state kind of stays the same after a while. Okay. So let's say the state is 5.
Okay. But all right. So that's that. But did I hear you that I won't pay 25% on all of that?
No. Again, it's like walking up the stairs.
Okay.
The first stair, we're higher than we were at the entry level tax rate for people that don't make that much. But because we make that much, we're going to go up a stair or two or three. So each time we go up, they don't throw us back down on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, when we go up to the next bracket, we only pay the higher tax on the money that was taxed at that level. But to get to that level, we may have paid 10%. We may have paid 15. We may have paid 20 on the different levels to get to where we are.
Somebody who makes a lot of money
is
paying three or four different levels of
taxes. Yeah.
Oh,
but they don't know it. And here's why they don't know it, because they've done it on a computer-aided software product, or even they look at the IRS tables. All that's baked in.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, no. And I said, here, when you go home, see if your tax rate times your taxable income is equal to that. It's not. It's a lot lower because of the lower rates were factored in.
Okay. Now, a question for the DMV, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
I know someone who, and they've lived in all three jurisdictions. They lived in Maryland, they lived in the District of Columbia, they now live in Virginia. They're both retired. They're going to, I think, downsize a smaller place or something.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with where they're living, but they're just looking for a change. All things being equal, and I know this is a very open-ended question, is D.C. more expensive than Maryland? Is Maryland more expensive than Virginia? I know everybody thinks they live in the worst jurisdiction when it comes to that.
We live in an interesting jurisdiction, but it's good for anybody that isn't like us in a tri-state area. Let's say we're just far away from being near any other state. So whatever state we live in, we have a tax base that would include income taxes, and if we own our home, real estate taxes. So really, both of those are paid. Both of those are tax deductible. So let's take a look at, well, we're in D.C. right now. D.C. has the highest individual tax rate, but remember the analogy of the stairs. They have a lot of stairs to get to that level. And it's a gnat's eyelash away from 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Maryland is really trying hard to catch up with D.C.
Yeah.
Now, Maryland, you would rocket to the highest bracket very quickly. So you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Each rate, when looked at, might be high, but to get to that rate, they might not pay as much as somewhere else. So, for example, somebody that lived in Maryland that was looking to move to D.C. would save on income taxes.
Interesting.
That's the same because their tax base is different. They would also save on real estate taxes. Now, I'm not picking on Maryland. Mm-hmm. I'm born and raised in Maryland.
No, yeah.
Let's say somebody was in Virginia looking at the same landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia, relative to the other two, has a very low income tax at whatever level this person's income was. So they have, and their tax rate for real estate is not as high as Maryland, but it's not as low as D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's just pure taxes. This gets back to your friend that moved to Washington State or wherever and travel. So then you'd have to say, well, D.C. now is providing me more of an opportunity to live in an urban environment because of the influx of people into D.C. The Virginia residents say, well, I can go out a little bit and I feel like I'm in the country, but I'm really not. And Maryland is somewhere in between that.
Okay.
So the quality of life.
Yeah. I mean, and if you had to say where it's the most expensive place, period, it would be Maryland.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then the district and then Virginia.
And Virginia is probably going to be the least because their income tax rate is so low.
Uh-huh.
You know, the highest rate there is 5 3/4. The highest rate in D.C. is 10, and the highest rate in Maryland is gnat's eyelash away from 9.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Look, talking about tax planning and career planning.
Yeah, we're kind of coming at the end of the year, and one of the focuses today was what do we have yet to claim? Well, we can only claim something generally, but not always, that we have paid. But there are some deductions available outside of the end of the year. We're all called calendar year cash basis taxpayers, which means whatever we pay taxes on is what we earned or got within a calendar year or paid. But there's some carryovers. Now, one very easy to do is an IRA, a traditional IRA. A traditional IRA can be funded as late as this year, April 18th, even though it was for the year 2015. Mm-hmm. So if somebody had a deductible IRA, which might be hard in today's world with the listening audience because they're covered under retirement plans, et cetera. They can still put money into an IRA, but they can't claim it as a tax deduction. So now, let's take the focus off the tax prize. The real prize ought to be economics. In other words, if I'm going to put money into an investment, I want an investment that will return me as good a rate as I'm comfortable risking. And that's what I want to do. And if I can't get the tax deduction, it's an investment for me. So now, do I put the money into an IRA and not get a tax deduction? And the answer is, well, you can't. So what are you going to make on it? Or if you could put money into a Roth IRA, there are limitations on income to do this. And that's where you ought to go, because whatever the earning power is in a Roth IRA, you're never going to pay taxes on it, generally speaking.
And taxes are probably as low as they're going to be.
Right? They've been goosed up. Will they be goosed up a little bit more? My gut is a little bit. But wherever they are, they're not going back to where they were a number of years ago. Not anytime soon.
Okay, I need to take a short break here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Be right back. Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Bob Lines from the National Institutes of Planning. And they do pre-retirement seminars for various federal agencies. And Bob is also is CPA correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And anyhow, you know your taxes. Bob's the guy you go to if you want to stay out of jail and pay your taxes. Bob, the deadline is April 18th. which is a break for some people. And as you pointed out, in New England, for reasons unknown to us, it's April 19th in two states. Got any last-minute tax tips for people? Obviously, people who haven't filed.
Okay. Remember, at this stage of the game, we're writing history that we've already written. So whatever we've done through December 31st, we've kind of done. But your question is better. Well, what can I do after December 31st, but before the filing deadline? And there are some things. We touched on a deductible IRA, which may or may not be an issue with our listening group, but it might be for their children. But I suggest they do a Roth if they have children with earned income. All righty. Should you itemize or should you not? And the answer is only if the itemized deductions total more than what they give you. Everybody that's a taxpayer gets a flat amount, and it's called a standard deduction. It's just here, you can claim this, whether you have more or less, you claim whatever you want. Now, of course, you'd only claim this if your itemized deductions were less. So maybe somebody starting out without a mortgage or...
Can you say what those are, the standard deductions?
Yeah, okay. Okay. So for a single person, the standard deduction is $6,300. What that says is, for that individual, they can just claim $6,300 and they don't need to support where it comes from. It's just a flat amount that's allowed. In other words, if they were to total up their deductions, which would include state and local income taxes, and at this stage of the game, maybe they don't have a house, they might have some professional expenses, they might have some charities. Most likely, they don't have $6,300. So they claim $6,300 and they're perfectly fine with the law. Now, for married folks, that number's doubled. It's $12,600. Now, what you find here is somebody maybe very young, married, haven't bought the house yet. Houses usually sway whether you itemize or not. But it also impacts it on the reverse side. A retired individual or a retired couple, the house is paid for. Maybe they don't have a huge state income tax deduction because they're in a state that doesn't have a state income tax. So they get a flat $12,600. They don't have to spend a penny of that, but Uncle gives them $12,600. And then there's some people that file their tax returns. It's called a filing status, and they're called head of household. They're neither married, nor are they just totally single. They are generally single, but they care for somebody in their house that would provide them an opportunity to do married filing, head of household. They get $9,250. I don't think anybody should write these numbers down or feel bad that they didn't. What I'm saying is, if you have a standard deduction that's higher, you don't need to beat your head against the wall to get that return done. File it.
Yeah.
And you pretty much know what your deductions are at this point, although there are some last minute. We mentioned deductible IRA. If they haven't funded it, they have until the 18th to do so. Charitable donations, it's too late to do it, but you might have forgotten. Especially the things that people forget are the non-cash things they give away, the old clothes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to appeal to anybody's creativity here if you gave it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. We've turned the microphone off here, so Bob is now. Do it again.
Okay. I talked about people that don't itemize because they can claim something called a standard deduction. You can itemize, but a younger an individual probably doesn't have a mortgage at that point. So they could just get a flat amount of $6,300 that they can claim whether they spent it or not on tax deductible items. Now, if they spent more than that, then they would claim itemized deductions. Married is double that, $12,600. And somebody that's not married, it's called head of household, is somewhere in between. In other words, they just get a flat amount. They don't have to go through these headaches that I've been talking about. But if they do have a home and they pay mortgage interest, real estate taxes, state and local income taxes, some charities, they might be able to, quote, itemize those. And if the total sum of those different itemized deductions is greater than the standard, they itemize. So, and that's a decision to be made, and they need to make that pretty quickly if they haven't done it already. Other things, medical expenses, people say, well, you know, I can deduct my health insurance. Yes, you can. But generally speaking, health insurance plus co-pays plus mileage back and to and fro the doc has to exceed 10% of your total income. I hope it doesn't exceed 10% of your income.
Yeah, for a variety of reasons.
And I would say oftentimes with the federal audience, that's not going to happen. Yeah. So don't go through the craziness of trying to figure it out. Office in the home, is it a deduction? Yeah. Is it a misunderstood deduction? Yes, because your total, it's called a miscellaneous itemized deductions, has to exceed 2% of your income.
I had an accountant one time, this was years ago, and he said, and I could have legitimately done it, but he said an office in the home is like saying, audit me to the IRS.
Okay, I'm not saying that anybody ever gave you bad advice. Mm-hmm. Years ago, I think that was true. When I talk about years ago, I'm talking about
years
20
ago.
Or 25
yeah.
years ago. Today, because of the proliferation of it, because we all work,
yeah.
we work at work, but we also take work home, somebody could say, I want an office in the home. Now, you just can't say that.
Yeah.
You have to have an area in the home that's exclusively and regularly used as an office. And you used to have to figure out the square feet and this and that. You still kind of sort of have to do that, but they have just a standard. Remember mm-hmm. the standard. They just have a standard amount that you can claim.
Well, you know, that harkens back to at the beginnings of telework. That was one of the problems because nobody had done it or very few people had done it. And it was, do people work at home? Will they have a dedicated space? What if they trip and fall? Whose liability is it? And all these agencies delayed it for a variety of reasons, delayed implementing teleworking. And then all of a sudden it's here. It's just happened and nobody gives it a thought.
That's because so many people were doing it, and
yeah.
so many people were doing it probably not properly, not because
yeah.
they were too aggressive. They just didn't know the rules. And, you know, somebody says, well, it's an entire bedroom. And I said, well, if it's a bedroom, what else is in
yep.
there besides your office? Well, a TV.
All I do is sleep in there.
Yeah, and I said, yeah. no. Or somebody that's in a one-bedroom apartment,
yeah.
and the dining room is there. I said, okay. But,
yeah.
you know, I explain it, and it's their choice.
Yeah.
So that's good. And you'd say, well, you know, what else can I do? Well, there isn't much left else to do. Some other more exotic things, somebody that might have a part-time self-employment business, they can fund a retirement plan as well as their thrift, as well as an IRA called a self-employed retirement plan, and they can fund it as late as the day they file the return. And if they file an extension, that pushes the date to fund the retirement plan way out. Now, somebody listening might say, well, you're talking about, I'm not talking about a fat cat. They might just do part-time, they might do part-time real estate. They might do part-time cooking and selling stuff, and they may have made $1,000, $2,000 over the year, and now they're going to pay income taxes on it, but they can start a self-employed retirement plan, which may be able to be funded and knock out the taxes on that profit.
You said something earlier about sales tax and that a lot of people don't understand it or the rules have changed. What's the deal on that?
It's pretty much gone,
mm-hmm.
but it's not gone for people that live in a state that don't have a state income tax.
So Washington State,
Nevada. Florida, Texas, Wyoming,
yeah.
Et cetera, they don't have a state income tax. So Congress passed this a number of years ago, and mm-hmm. they said, listen, if you pay sales tax in your state but you don't have a state income tax, you can, listen to this now, you can claim the higher of the two, the state income tax or the sales taxes. And Mike is listening to me. He said, mm-hmm. you just said they live in a state with no state income
yeah.
tax. That's accurate. But what if they move to a state that has an income tax, but it's very low? Tennessee, for example, doesn't have an income tax, but it taxes dividends and interest. So that tax is going to be pretty low. So the sales tax is probably going to be higher. So, and then we have different people listening at different stages in life. So a retiree might not have high state income taxes, or they move to a state that has very low or no income tax, then they could claim their sales taxes. And some of us remember back in the day when you could deduct a sales tax on a car. Well, that's still a sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
But don't mishear me that you can deduct sales tax on a car wherever you live. It's only in those states that don't have an income tax.
Yeah.
I hope I'm making sense.
Well, and
this.
You also make me glad that I have a good tax person to explain these things. At the end of last year,
mm-hmm.
there was this rush in Congress. You know, they did nothing, virtually nothing. And then at the end of the year, they did a lot of stuff very fast. And these things called extenders, were any of those,
the thing we were just talking about was an extender.
Okay.
So it was to pass December 31st, 2015. And they didn't do anything to, or 14 rather, they didn't do anything to revive it until the end of 15. But they did it with like a week to go. And so with a week to go, they extended what would have passed. One of these was this. Some other ones, people that are maybe involved in the educational community where they teach in school.
Teachers buy supplies.
It's $250, but it was to go away.
Yeah.
And there were a number of other things, all small, but beneficial to many people.
Yeah, I seem to remember at the time they didn't seem that sinister, so they're not. Take a short break here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM, and we'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Bob Lyons from the National Institutes of Transition Planning, and he is also a CPA, and this is the last-minute tax time for people. You have until April 18th, a couple extra days, but if you haven't done it, there's probably a good reason, and it's not going to be fun getting into it. Well, we got a question here from Ohio, and it is, and I'm so glad you're here. How does the shared responsibility payment work under the Affordable Care Act?
Well, whoever pays a medical expense, healthcare premiums would be a medical expense, co-pays would be a medical expense, people that professionals, doctors that don't have any co-pays, whatever you pay medically, you're going to get a quote, entry into the possibility of claiming a tax deduction. So what makes it a reality? The sum of all your medical expenses, the co-pays, the docs, your health insurance, Medicare premiums for some that are retired, et cetera, would all be totaled. And depending on one's age, most people are going to fit into this category. If the total of all those deductions, including this payment of shared responsibility, exceeds 10% of their total income, you get to deduct only the amount that exceeds 10%. Oh. So let's say an individual has, I'm using a number, maybe it's too high, $100,000 total income. So their threshold, again, given their age, is $10,000 in medical expenses. So they would total up everything they spent medically, and if it was less than that, nice exercise, but no reward.
If it was 9999,
you get nothing.
Nothing, okay. And if it's $10,500, they'd get $500?
Right. And they save at whatever their tax bracket is. Yeah. Remember, at the top of the show, we talked about that mythical 30% tax bracket.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. We've got a few minutes left here. What do you have for us?
I stumbled at the beginning of the show, and we talked about a form that you could file to extend the payment of the taxes. And it's a form 9465. I said it was a 945 form.
And you could download it from
the
IRS website.
And it's really simple, and they don't hound you. Just pay what you tell them you're going to pay. All righty. But the real way to look at this, and we've analyzed, because we're talking about with 13 days left, what can we do? I think the best day to start tax planning is January 1st of the year that you're. So, in other words, after we get done with whatever we have for the next 13 days, tax planning starts the next day.
Yeah.
What can I do to beef up my thrift contribution? How could I get money into a Roth IRA? People are going to look at this at different stages of their career. Beginning career folks don't quite have the income to spend on some things, but they ought to jump all over whatever it says Roth in front of it. Because as they go through mid-career and later, their income might be too high to have a Roth IRA. It won't be too high for a Roth TSP. Then, as they get maybe mid-career, they're going to be a little bit more tax-hungry because there may or may not be a spouse, there may be a family, and money could be tighter. So they really need the tax deduction that the traditional thrift would give rather than the Roth. But I would hope that they could do the Roth. You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
So that's
a
good tax deduction.
But anything with Roth in front of it is good, right?
Yeah, okay. But if you get a tax deduction and it helps you economically, which the traditional thrift would, and economically might be, well, I'm going to put money into a traditional IRA. Or maybe I'd like to put it into a Roth, but my income's too high. I'm lucky enough to be late mid-career or early pre-retirement. My income's too high.
I know a young person who doesn't make very much money. Like they're like a teacher's assistant. So they're not making much money, and she's investing in a traditional 401k plan right now. But since she doesn't make much money, the tax savings are probably not that great. Wouldn't she be better off if maybe switching from steak to chicken to go directly to a Roth?
I would say go to the Roth.
Yeah.
But if money's really tight, the tax benefits, but the future benefits are going to far outweigh the current pain.
If
the person's an assistant, that means they're not going to be in that position for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
So, you know, invest early and stay late.
Yeah, okay. Another thing, see if there's an analogy here. I know two people who are fanatics for coupons, clipping coupons, and they go to the store armed with the coupons and they buy stuff. And to me, I think sometimes they're buying things they don't really need, but they can get it cheap. They can get 20% off, 30% off. And isn't that the same in some ways with deductions?
You nailed it. In other words, to get a tax deduction is only rewarding if it's beneficial to you, not because you save tax dollars.
Yeah.
So you can go out and you know, lose money in the stock market. You can go out and lose money, lend it to somebody that'll never pay you back. You'll get a deduction for it. Doesn't make a bit of sense.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm buying that bigger house to get a bigger mortgage. Why?
Yeah.
If you needed it, fine. But to get a greater tax deduction or to pay more in real estate, again, there's economics.
Yeah.
You know, live within the means and enjoy what you got, but don't reach out further, especially with the, I won't say especially with the coupon. Sometimes people do it, but they save money.
Yeah.
You know, why after the holidays they have these great sales, you have to wait in line to get into a store because it's discounted. Did you need it? No.
Yeah.
But I saved a third.
Yeah. And well, and looking at the markup on things too. They mark it up 40% and then give you 20% off. So. Any final words here?
My final words would be start early and stay late with regards to planning during the year. Think twice about what you spent. You don't need to be miserly. Try to put money away into the thrift, be it a Roth or a traditional. If you're lucky enough to be able to do an IRA as well, that's a lot of money. But tax deferral is the name of the game. And if you can get a tax deferral and never be taxed, Roth should always be in front of whatever you invest in.
Okay. And I know when you do the seminars, I've talked to your people, and they say they learn just by the wisdom of the crowd things that they did not know. So, thank you, Bob.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see everybody here next week at 10 a.m.